Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy.
Presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation.
When lawmakers adjourned sine die late last month, it wasn't just the end of the 59th Oklahoma legislature. It was the end of a leadership era, too. Senate President Pro Tem Greg Treat and House Speaker Charles McCall are two of the longest-serving top dogs in their respective chambers in Oklahoma history. Treat served 3 2-year sessions in charge of the Senate, and McCall 4 sessions atop the House. Previously, most speakers or pro tems served only 1 or maybe 2 2-year sessions if they were lucky. Claremore Senator Stratton Taylor owns the record for Senate presidents, serving as pro tem for 4 legislatures, the 45th, 46th, 47th, and 48th. A half dozen speakers in Oklahoma history survived for 3 2-year sessions, a couple even for 3-plus sessions, but McCall endured for 4. Their longevity alone means that Treat and McCall had myriad opportunities to craft and cement legislative and public policy legacies that few of their predecessors could have even dreamed of. To better understand the Treat and McCall years, and to better grasp what they did for and to Oklahoma, we invited someone who not only served as the Senate's leader, but also helped topple a House Speaker and served 28 years in the State House overall, former Senate President Pro Tem turned Observer columnist Cal Hobson, to join us for this week's ObserverCast as we look back at the Treat-McCall era and ahead to what we think is going to be a McCourtney-Hilbert era. Cal, great to see you as always.
Great to be here, and I fibbed to Marianne. I took a risk and saw a green little button that expands the screen.
You touched the screen!
I did, but it worked.
So. Okay.
And I had to fess up.
Okay. I appreciate your honesty. Yes, but nothing happened, so we're good. But we wouldn't be good Democrats if we didn't question authority, right? So, like, that's our job. That's what we do.
That isn't what I was trying to do. I just had to mess with your brain. So, anyway,
okay.
Here we are.
Here we are. All in one piece. It's all good.
Well, so... What's your first blush when you think of the Treat McCall era at the legislature?
Well, one of them especially grew into the role, in my opinion, and you won't be surprised. I thought that Greg Treat went from kind of an obscure chairman of pretty minor committee to the pro temship. Slowly and then in an accelerated way, began to realize quicker than House members did that they had given not only the barn to this inexperienced governor, meaning Stitt, they gave him the horses and the wagon and everything else after a year or two of Stitt's governorship. And by that, I mean, you'll recall they gave him the power to appoint agency heads without boards and commissions and major ones. Let's just start with, good grief, education. I don't have to say any more than that as to the reality of the kinds of people that he selected to put on boards and commissions. It was true of mental health. We had 3 or 4 health directors that he went through. So, let me just say, Treat figured out, I think, after a couple years, what he'd done, and he's dug in his heels since, led the Senate like he should have. By that, I mean, took a longer view of the situation in Oklahoma than just the short-term pleasure of, well, let's have another tax cut, even if it's only a few pennies for the lower-income folks. So that's about Treat. He's gone now in November. McCall came with, a silver or golden spoon in his mouth, son of a banker, grandson of a banker from Atoka, very attractive, handsome fellow, well-spoken. When you had the rare opportunity to hear him speak on the floor, often not there, often his office, which is okay, I guess, because he had a strong floor leader. But McCall got worse as it went on rather than better. And by that, I mean his ambition, his personal ambition in the last 2 years of his speakership to be somebody politically again in the future, I think revealed, unfortunately, a streak that too many politicians have, which is, this is all about me. I think he'll come back and run for governor, perhaps later congressman or senator or something. So that's why he threw in with Stitt on a tax cut that was completely unnecessary, contrary to the good of Oklahoma. So let me give Stitt a B minus moving towards a B, and McCall a C plus moving to a D, if I had to put it in grades.
So I think what you're saying is that you sort of feel like we do, you know, when you pose the question, did you ever dream that Greg Treat would become a hero in the legislative process? I can say I never did. And I was shocked by that.
Well, you were a close observer. You've been there daily for years. I just followed kind of his legislation, his commentary, his willingness to admit what was going on, which was Stitt despised him and forced Treat into a corner, even, I think, behind the scenes and kind of openly trying to replace him with a right winger in a very close vote for Treat to retain his job as pro tem. An example of where I think Treat grew, remember, he was the guy that had an education bill that really upset most of his rural legislators, and they voted him down. Pro tems are not supposed to lose votes, and he did. And after that experience, I thought Treat got stronger once he survived the push to remove him, and I admired him for it.
Well, and he also, it seems to me that he, as he got stronger, he did an even better job of sort of isolating the crazies in his caucus. And by that, you know, who are we thinking of? We're thinking of the Nathan Dalms of the world and people like that. And
the former Joseph Silk, you know, I mean, he had he had some doozies in his caucus.
Yeah. That's right. And another one is the new one that's going to be a terrible representative for the Lawton area for the next 3 years.
Oh, God.
I mean,
while we're talking about it, though, he kind of has like these, like, he's got like, you know, the 7th level of hell right wingers, you know, Nathan Dom out there, Dusty Devers. But then you kind of have like those mid rank, like, but still really terrible, you know, Warren Hamilton, you know, gosh, who's the other guy?
Bullard is pretty bad.
Say that again.
David Bullard is pretty bad.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Although he's on managed care. I'll grant him that.
Well, that's something else I want to talk about at some point today. But, you know, just the whole kind of like Southern Oklahoma, the swath of Southern Oklahoma, these, you know, these individuals are just, my gosh. So, you know,
people,
I guess, you know, they're the ones like that are, but the way he's really handled it has been interesting, because, you know, my understanding of it always was that the Senate was the more moderate, temperate chamber compared to the House. And it's been interesting to see how that swapped a little bit. And I think it's, I would say, you know, with John Eccles as the floor leader in the House, you know, firm hand and control of the floor. And then in the Senate, when you had Kim David as the floor leader, I would think it was a little bit more unwieldy when she was the floor leader. But when that shifted and it became Greg McCourtney, it kind of moderated again, right? So it's just like, hand in hand with McCall over in the House, you've had John Nichols as the floor leader. And just kind of that chain of command, I think, has been very effective in maintaining control. Not necessarily like because they pass good legislation, but they get what they want. And you never saw the caucus buck up against McCall.
May I jump in there?
Yeah.
You really have nailed it on those personalities. Go back to 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans finally admitted that they had almost destroyed public education and health in Oklahoma with their endless series of tax cuts under Fallon and then Stitt. In 2018, you'll recall the legislature came back in and the first time in history gathered together three-fourths vote and raised taxes after, of course, 35,000 teachers and supporters of public ed came to the Capitol and rallied for days and days, perhaps weeks and weeks. Well, behind the scenes in that election year, 2018, a handful of the leaders in the House had been quietly accumulating significant money and a leadership pack. And the key player in that almost never gets recognized, which is what he likes. And that's the fellow named Representative Cannaday.
Yes.
Chairman of the Judiciary Committee, which
the criminal judiciary, right? This time now he's not on. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they went after the worst of the worst in the Republican caucus, about 17 or 18. One of them was my state representative at the time, Bobby Cleveland, and they beat 14, 15 of the 18, which gave a new flavor, we'd hoped, a more moderate flavor to the overall body in the House. So I agree with you. They were very firm. Now, one downside came in this last year, and I've told John Eccles this to his face, and I've had him in class two or three times mm-hmm. in my classes. He really turned hard MAGA right in the last year and pushed a series of very harmful pieces of legislation in his last year and basically ran over his caucus with those terrible ideas because he wants to be the state's next attorney general. And that's, again, in my opinion. So I think that's where that's going.
Well, I'm glad we started down this path because one of the notes that I had made in preparation for the discussion is my sense that McCall's regime ushered in a new era in terms of the kind of money that the speaker was wielding to control who the candidates were and what and who was going to have the chance of being successful at the ballot box. And maybe I'm wrong about that, but I don't think so.
In the old days,
folks used to go to the speakers and the speaker would say, well, you're interested in running for the seat. Great thing. You're going to have to raise X amount of money if you're going to be successful. And the stories I always heard is that McCall called him in and if it was somebody that he thought he could work with, i.e. control, that person was pledged a certain amount of money. They didn't have to worry anymore about beating the bushes and trying to get the checks to roll in. But there may have been a little bit of my immediate thought is, I'm horrified by that. That's all we need is more money in this process because we see what turns out with all the money already in it. But on the other hand, it sounds like there might've been a little bit of a silver lining there in that it was used to knock out some knuckleheads who, really wanted to take Oklahoma down a bad path and kept us, the House from being overrun by the MAGAites.
If you think about it, though, effectively, they just kind of got a fly swatter out, right? Like, Because they've continued to do what they do anyways. So, you know, what Cal was just saying about the legislation that they passed this year. I mean, this is terrible to say, but like all the abortion legislation that has passed the past couple years really seems tame. I mean, I think it's because it's very predictable, right? Like, and it just kind of follows a script. Like, so all the anti-choice legislation that's passed in both chambers the past couple of years, okay, that's just out of the Republican playbook. But the hard right shit that they passed this year with, you know, immigration, the anti-trans legislation, all the really, really, really reprehensible, terrible stuff, like trying to legislate against people's existence, essentially. Which, of course, I'll just point out is a contradiction if you are so-called pro-life, but whatever. You know, just that stuff has kind of been late in the game. So it's like any good they may have done, you know, Chris Kennedy may have done. And I mean, by getting rid of, you know, the Dan, what's his face, Schultz or what, Schwartz, whatever his name was, I'm blanking right now. But okay, fine. But then it just kind of like, there was still just the foundation beneath them, because they still did this stuff this year, right? Like they're going out with some of the most heinous legislation that's been passed and within what, the past 20 years.
Well, and they're identified nationally as one of the two or three most conservative legislative bodies in the nation. Let me take what just was said in two parts. One about the money. And how it is allocated and all that. Way, way back when I first showed there, you had to raise your own money, basically. Uh-huh. You didn't have to raise hundreds of thousands, but you had to, if you were going to win, you had to raise, to prove you had some friends, you had to raise some money. After you'd proven you could win, there would be, then the lobbyists would help fill in some of the numbers in subsequent races because they knew incumbents have a great advantage. Then there was the big change. What we did was to abolish the right of powerful people like speakers and pro tems from accumulating a huge amount of money, which they always could, and then turning around from their own campaign account and giving that money to either incumbents or the favored people out in the elections. And with the ability to have the speaker have a pack like that, the floor leader, the appropriations chairman, the vice chair. In other words, you could stack a big pile of money from 8 or 9 or 10 members of the House. And the trade was, the argument was, when they convinced the Ethics Commission to allow them to allocate money from their own accounts, the trade was, and we're going to lower the maximum amount a person could give from 5,000 to a lower number, 2,500, I think, to start. Then it was raised to 2,800. It is now 3,300. So that's the money answer as to the consolidation, even greater consolidation of power in the hands of a very few people at the Capitol. That's issue number one. The other issue is what Marianne just said. After they had spent a decade of ruining education in Oklahoma and healthcare, you know, finally the rally came at the Capitol. Finally, some revenue has come in. And don't forget, the feds have sent billions of dollars to this state in various programs with nary a vote from any Republican in D.C. Now, what they do is fly back here and take credit for it. But that's another major reason why these guys think they're swimming in money. And finally, to confirm Marianne's very good point, this session allowed people like Echols to pick out things that they had not damaged in the past. They finally had time to get around to it. And the best and most hurtful.
They don't gotta worry about it next year.
They're gone. The damage they did to the initiative petition in the last week basically erodes any chance for a vote on the minimum wage change this November. All the work those people did and gathering signatures is all by the boards. They knew that. And so that's the other piece of what they did as they went out the door. And the vast majority of their caucus were co-conspirators because they went along with it.
So I want to make those connections then, because it's not just McCall and Treat, right? It's what they allow to happen in their chambers. And leadership in the chambers does not happen without the person in charge's approval, right? So we may have Charles McCall, but as a result, we also have Kyle Hilbert. And I'm like, okay, what is it? Tell me about this kid. Like, what, this kid, who is this kid, right? Who will now be replacing McCall. But you also had John Echols. And so just a refresher for anyone who doesn't understand, I remember vividly 2020 COVID year, I believe it was. It had to have been 2020, not 2021, but 2020, you know, this time of year when they finally came back, well, not this time of year, it was May, sorry. It's June, everybody. let me remember that. But anyways, in May, when they finally came back to session, came back on the floor and decided to do some things. And meanwhile, you know, people had been back in the, you know, halcyon days of Twitter, messaging, you know, Leader Echols and messaging other legislative leaders like, hey, what are you going to do for in-person voting? Can we, you know, change some things so people can vote by mail, so people aren't forced to show up at their polling places to vote in the middle of COVID? And I distinctly remember John Echols saying, yeah, we're looking at that. We're aware we're looking at that. And so what did they do in the waning hours of that session? They passed laws that made it harder to vote in absentia than to make it easier. And so you still had to go and do things in person in order to vote in the middle of motherfucking COVID, right? So this is what they do in the waning hours. They've always done this. They wait till the very end and they push through some really, really noxious things. And so this is what you have. Like, out of the blue, suddenly you have the immigration legislation passed. The trans stuff, we saw it happening across the country, right? I mean, Oklahoma, I've said this before, it's literally the first paragraph of my dissertation. We are 1,500 miles from the southern border, and yet we act like it does anything but bolster our workforce to have, you know, immigrants come into our state. So you see them do these things at the very last minute, and this has been John Echols' playbook. But I will also point out what John Echols does when he is not in the legislature, and what all of his private, what all his, like, where he actually makes his money. I would be interested to see how that follows him when he decides to run for the AG's office, because I'll just remind everybody, but that there have been deaths in the Cleveland County Detention Center because of his medical services. That he is a contractor. He contracts out to detention facilities across the state for their healthcare services. So the nurses, the doctors, whatever medical provisions are on site for, say, the Cleveland County Detention Center, that's his contract. That's where he's making money. He has done that for years. And people are dying because of the neglect of his medical professionals. This is what he does in his spare time. This is who John Echols is. You know, and nothing is changing. They have multiple lawsuits against them, but this is the man that's been running the legislation on the floor. And so by affiliation, he is a result of Charles McCall. So, I mean, just a point to make, you know,
I'm from Cleveland County. I'm aware of what you just described. I believe there are multiple contracts. They're significant. They're large. There's a symbiotic relationship between Echols and sheriffs, and we have, as you all probably know, an election today impacting the sheriff of Cleveland County, who's overspent his budget. There's big flap about that down there. He's several million dollars in the hole. You're right about the deaths. Now there's supposedly going to be an outside audit investigation of what went on. It takes, you know, though, a process over a number of years, it seems, before anybody serious looks up and says, this thing stinks and we need to do something about it. And by that time, the players are either dead, term limited, or gone on to other activities. I better stop at that point. because I was about to launch into a different point.
Go right ahead. Yeah.
No, please. Yeah.
Yeah.
Going back to the who are the new guys? I think it's worthy to mention, for example, well, the new speaker supposedly, and I suspect he will be Kyle Hilbert. I don't know much about him. He's very young, from the northeast part of the state, Depew or
yeah, Broken, Tulsa.
Yeah.
Okay, that area. Well-spoken, attractive young man. Very prominent, I believe, at OSU and student politics up there, from what I have looked up. The strongest day for a new speaker or a new pro tem is the first day you have the job. It's all downhill from there if you are trying to do hard things. Now, if you're trying to stay in office, play a little golf, make everybody happy, that's an entirely different world. But on the other side, and I don't know what Hilbert will do, we'll see. The other guy is more tested over in the Senate. And I've come to admire McCartney.
I'm a fan of his as well.
He's been an able fellow. He has a preacher background out of Ada. He hasn't been, you know, out in front with some of his colleagues on shoving Christianity down our throats or Catholic churches, that kind of stuff. He's raised a ton of money, $330,000, has nearly $300,000 in the bank. His opponent has raised about $25,000. He's a retired National Guardsman. So I think McCartney wins tonight, probably fairly comfortably, although the gun gang in Oklahoma went after him because he's not a pure, let's arm every first grader with a bazooka kind of guy. So I think he'll be back. I don't think Hilbert drew an opponent. He's likely to have a very supportive caucus. So those guys will be in play. The other key player coming back is, of course, Kevin Wallace, who is the appropriations chairman in the House. He has two opponents. He also has a bucket full of money, and they don't have much. I can't imagine Wallace not returning, whether Hilbert keeps him or not. I don't know. Maybe you all do. But he's been a pretty able appropriations chairman. Somebody's got to be the new floor leader in both the House and the Senate. Key posts. See how that turns out. So we should mention sometime a minute or two about the firing, the departure.
Yes.
Yes, Chairman Thompson, and I've got a thought or two about that whenever it's appropriate.
So who do we think will be floor leader in the House?
I would only be guessing.
Maybe, or?
I yield to both of you on that one.
Yeah, I don't know either.
The only person I am not as, you know, well-read on the House as I was even 2 years ago, but like, you know, current chairs, I mean, it's interesting. The only other person that I could have seen doing it would have been Marcus McIntyre, and he's not coming back. I think he was a strong leader, really smart, really savvy, very strategic, and he's not coming back. My next best guess would be Chris Kennedy.
I'll knock that in the head. I don't think the people who support Chris Kennedy want him in the floor leader job because they know what he does for them in judiciary. Mm-hmm. So okay. I think he'll stay there because of that. The other point is, though, I do think that maybe one of the stronger assistant floor leaders that's been running the floor with Echols might be the next logical person. It often happens that way. Or either one of these two leaders may decide, look, instead of having 16 white guys, cut up the budget, which is what happened at the end of this session. And all you had to do is look at the tape of the supposedly open budgetary discussions. The only woman in the room was a staffer sitting down at the end of the table who they turned to when the 16 white guys didn't know the answer to a hard question because she understood the budget. So hopefully, maybe an able woman or minority may rise to a higher position in the House or Senate, but we'll see. I can't name one that's logical at this point.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think, like,
this may tell us all we need to know about this. I mean, it's just, and you know, Cal, you know better than we do. You never know actually who's going to sort of rise to the occasion when they get the opportunity. There are people that I would have not given you a plug nickel for that they were going to, you know, be able to handle something, and couldn't figure out why they got picked, and they grew into the position.
No, that's absolutely right. You've already named the best example with Treat's behavior towards the latter part of his 6-year run, and his willingness to stand up to Stitt. And when Treat did that kind of stuff, now he burned some bridges. Treat's got to find a job, right? He hasn't announced a political job he's running for. Pro tems and speakers usually cannot get elected to statewide offices because they've got a record that if they've done anything important, it's probably one that's gotten them beat up. So Treat's probably looking for work. He came from the Coburn family out of Washington, D.C.
And his wife was working for Langford. So,
Unhoff, that's a name from the past. Jiminy Christmas.
I'm just looking at, you know, the other floor leaders, the other floor leaders in the House. And I mean, and none of them, I mean, there's Mark McBride, but I mean, he's gone.
Okay.
So I'm not even, I can't even keep track of that. I mean, there's.
Name the floor leaders.
John Pfeiffer. No. Steve Beshear. Who's that guy? Mark McBride. Josh West, no. Kevin West, I hope not.
Beshear was pretty able with the microphone, but basically the assistant floor leader is recognized the next person to speak.
Of the one, Brian Hill. You have Tammy West as majority leader.
She's not majority. No. She's an assistant majority leader, something like that.
It says right here on the website, she's majority leader.
Wrong. You're breaking news then if she's been named majority leader.
Okay. And then, I mean, caucus chair, Stan May?
Negative. It's one of those earlier ones you named, if it's any of that bunch. But again, the power is so concentrated now in the corner office with the speaker or the pro tem. The others are important, no question about it. And John Eccles, let me back up and say he's one of the smartest dudes that's come along. That's a double-edged sword. He is a lawyer. That's usually helpful. But again, he's so smart that he is also very glib and would kind of BS around on hard topics. Instead of being kind of straight arrow in answering the questions with people like Fugate and others among the Democrats who had him cornered. But unfortunately, the 81 Republicans, most of them sat there like stumps and just hit the green button if it was an Eccles bill. It wasn't always that way, I assure you. There were very, very definitive, serious fights and discussions among even the Democrats when we had 35 Democrats or 33 Democrats. I'll give you an example. Stratton Taylor let the right to work issue out of committee, which was a huge bonus to the Republicans. And it was the beginning of the end of labor union strengths in Oklahoma. Stratton did that. I was adamantly opposed to that. It cost us several seats, but it was just different back then for a number of reasons.
Yeah, I can't. The only, I'm just thinking, okay, Kyle Hilbert, you know, maybe one of his fellow Tulsa area guys. Oh God, I had his name and now I can't remember. He was on the public health, not public health. The health subcommittees, Mark, he's from Sepulpa.
I don't know the name, but let me knock that in the head as far as somebody from the Northeast. Speakers, if they're smart, will geographically take care of a part of the state that otherwise is going to buck up. An example is, since Hilbert's over there from Bristow, you might think he needs to find a Republican from the Oklahoma City SMSA, where you've got 5 million folks. Or you could go way, way to the Southwest. There's a kid down there that's shown some reasonableness. I think you'll agree. I believe his name is Daniel Pay, P-A-E.
Former student body president at OU, I believe. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's also Asian American minority.
Comanche County, yep.
I wouldn't be surprised that he might have a more prominent role if Hilbert is thinking geographically, which sometimes is wise to do.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, so let's see. Over in the Senate.
Yeah, the cooler, wiser body that lets the hot flashes of the House cool in saucer of regional.
The ice bath for the.
I'll dream on, but.
I know. So let's talk about Roger Thompson's resignation.
Okay.
And what exactly the ramifications are for that. So Roger Thompson was long time A and B chair in the House. So the counterpart to
Senate.
Wallace in the House, in the Senate. Sorry. Yeah. Kevin Wallace in the House.
Yes.
So he resigns. Why?
Well, he didn't resign. He was fired.
Okay.
Well, but he's decided.
Oh, you mean resign from the Senate?
From the Senate, yeah.
Oh. Well, it's because he was fired as appropriations chairman.
So he's out of Okemah, you know, and this was his gig for what? Right. For a hot minute. So
I know him. And secondly, I happen to be in the same room with Greg Treat the mm-hmm. night that he fired Roger Thompson. Am I saying the name right? Yeah, right. Right. Mm-hmm. It was the old timers dinner that we have every couple of years, and old timers like me and current senators get together for a dinner. Well, when it came time for Treat to stand up and welcome everybody, he started with the following sentence. Sometimes you have to do very difficult things, things you don't want to do, unpleasant things, and that includes what happened today to Senator Thompson. Well, those who had come from the Capitol knew what he was talking about. I only guessed, but when I got home that night and looked at Google, I saw that Thompson had been removed. The cover story is Thompson was playing footsie in private meetings with Kevin Wallace and making deals outside of the normal process with the pro tem. I don't believe that. I think what Kevin and Thompson were doing were moving forward on the budgetary plan, and Treat thought or believed that it didn't fit entirely with the so-called new transparent plan to write a budget. That was the story. I think there's another nugget down below there that I haven't found yet, because I have not found the evidence that some cabal was writing a budget without the involvement of the pro tem. So that, and then, you know, Thompson, like an adult, sat in his chair for the last few days of the legislature, but humiliation being what it is, said sayonara here in the last week, and he's gone home, and so there'll be a special election to replace him. He was smart. He was pro-public education, strong supporter of health care, a great defender of the tax base that we have in Oklahoma. So he did a number of right things, which means bad things are usually going to happen to you when you do a number of good things in the legislature.
But this creates a situation where the governor controls when the election will be, the special election to fill the seat. And we've already seen that the governor is involved in supporting folks of his ideological ilk, which includes white Christian nationalism, among other things. And, you know, as we saw with the election of Devers in Lawton, you know, strange things happen in these low turnout elections. And we're not that far. The split in the Senate, it's hard. Not everybody stays in the same camp all the time, but it seems to me that it's getting harder and harder to sort of corral the Republican caucus and maintain order from the people who live in the reality-based side of the universe. Am I off base on that? Am I misreading this?
No, I think you're exactly right. The vote, for example, although nobody has a scorecard, from what I am aware of, Senator Standridge from Norman was the opponent to Treat in the battle a year ago or so to replace Treat, and the vote was something like 21-19 or 20-18 in that range, which is far too close.
And that's insane. That's insane.
That is the reality.
That is an insane vote.
Well,
particularly, you know, if you look up deplorable in the dictionary, Rob Standridge is there.
Right there. Like,
yes, we'll find out if his wife is the new senator.
She's a candidate. Yes,
she certainly is. So you had that environment, which is tough enough. And then the good folks of Lawton send probably the worst man west of I-35 to the Oklahoma State Senate in the form of Dusty Devers, which would give anybody, if not a heart attack, a bad headache. So you have that environment. It's going to be very, very difficult for McCourtney to govern, but he's probably the strongest of the bunch to attempt to put the package together. The upside is, of course, Stitt doesn't know or doesn't believe or admit that he's lame duck, but he really is lame duck. He hasn't won a court case in 6 years, so his stroke will be diminishing. McCourtney will be on the upswing, and the young kid, Kyle Hilbert, we'll see where he lands. But we know he's a wannabe something bigger eventually, so put all that together with your crystal ball and tell me what's going to happen.
Who isn't coming back in the Senate? I mean, there were some people that just aren't coming back, and I'm blanking on who all that is.
Well, several quit early. I can name a
one. Dave Rader's not coming back. Is that correct?
No, I'll have to yield to you on that.
Okay.
there are several that have opponents. Bergstrom has an opponent.
Thank God. Sorry.
Stevens has an opponent. McCourtney has an opponent. Oh, we've missed a race we should talk about. The rerun of Shane Jett and Char from, I believe, Shawnee Seminole. I don't know if y'all think that's a close race or not, but it's certainly a bitter one. And I actually know Shane. I served with Shane Jett. He was coming in as I was going out. And he used to be a moderate, reasonable House member. Am I wrong about that, Arnold?
I remember hearing stories about him on the vote for House Bill 1804 and how he was very moderate and very on the fence about it. I mean, definitely of, you know, the Kiesel, Kiesel era, right? Because, I mean, they're all from that area. So, yes, he was reasonable once upon a time.
And remember why he might have been kind of reasonable on the issue of dark-skinned people or immigrants?
Because his wife is one.
Thank you very much.
She's I'll say, yeah.
America, that's right.
Yeah. But I also seem to recall, and I may, you know, I've slept since then, but I seem to recall him taking a walk on that boat.
Yes, yes. But he, I, th- my,
and I,
think
and
he,
I
like,
was
debated
just
against
appalled.
It or something.
I didn't know that. Took a walk on 1804.
I think it was 1804. I just remember.
Yeah,
just
I'm pretty sure he did walk, but I believe he was like vocal against it, or somehow it was known that he was against it. So
I think that's right. Yes.
That was our pal.
But then he became a guy who was trying to figure out what to do with his life. He got into all kinds of conflict when he worked for the tribe there in Shawnee. And he seemed to come out through all this on the other side, just so far in the, you know, Christo-fascism world. I mean, he is, oh my God, he makes Nathan Dom almost look like, you know.
But he ran for Congress once or twice, remember?
Yes, that's right.
Went down the drain there. There's another kid from his area. It's always dangerous to do this, make a prediction about something that's very unlikely to happen. But I'm going to do it just for fun on a race over in that Shawnee area. It involves another kid I served with who was reasonable. He was a Democrat. He was pretty articulate, smart. His name is Representative Danny Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh,
your facial expression tells me everything. Well, old Danny was a pretty pleasant, charming guy, and I got to know him fairly well. And when he left the legislature, I think he ran for something, but got beat and moved on. I ran into him. He was peddling telecommunication products or whatever. Anyway, he comes back and comes back as a Republican, right? And now sits on the front row, proud to sit up there next to Sherry Conley, my terrible plan. Uh-huh. Anyway, I was looking at the campaign donations in his race just before we came on the air, and I thought, surely he's a cinch. Well, Danny Williams is from Seminole, right?
Right.
He's got an opponent named Darlene Wallace, Republican. And I was sure that Darlene Wallace wouldn't have any money, and Danny would have some money in this campaign account. Sure enough, I was half right. Danny's got money in his account because some of the big dogs in the House, including Kyle Hilbert, have given him money from their accounts, okay? But over for Darlene Wallace, whoever that is, she's got significant, serious oil money from people like Mike Cantrell, maxed out at $3,300, and other names, prominent names. The guy that owns the Children's Museum over there. He's given Darlene money. I don't know what's happening there, but tonight when the numbers come in, don't be surprised if that's not a pretty close race. So now I'm on a ledge.
Okay, so I have a few names to put out there for the Senate in terms of leadership positions. Adam Pugh, Paul Rosino. Floor leader, maybe.
Well, here's a couple things. I know Adam
Pugh. I may be behind on the news. So, yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. Go ahead. Sorry.
That's all right. Adam is an Air Force guy. Mm-hmm. And he happened to be at a wedding I was at involving people we both knew. And I chatted with him quite a bit. He's very proud of his support for public education. He survived the onslaught of the right-wing nuts up in Edmond to get elected the first time. He actually ended up being unopposed, I think, this time, which is a kind of amazing statement, trying to represent Edmond with that church faction up there. So he's
but he did run the bill that got us Medicaid work requirements in the state of Oklahoma. He is the guy behind that. But anyways, keep on. Sorry.
That's fine. That's right. He filed a gazillion public education bills and talks a good talk about that. He represents the Edmond Public Schools that had the guts to sue Dumbbell Ryan Walters over telling local school districts what libraries are supposed to do. Edmond won that case, as we all know. Bottom line, I think he's a player in the next 4 to 8 years, depending on what he wants to do. The other fellow that you mentioned,
Paul Rosino, UConn. Yeah.
Rosino is South Oklahoma City, isn't he? Or is he?
Yeah. He kind of like loops up that area too, I think.
He got promoted, as you know, to vice chair of appropriations after the demise of Senator Thompson, and was in the room during the negotiations with the governor. So he got a promotion via treat, which is a signal he may end up being somebody. The fellow that was named to replace Thompson, I believe his name is Senator Hall. Can't give you the town. Maybe it's Perry, where he's from. His background is in banking, as you might expect.
Right there. Mm-hmm.
And he was a member of the Kansas City Federal Reserve, a member of that board at one time. So he's got some strong credentials. It probably would be a pretty tough thing, I think, for McCourtney to dump Hall. I'd be surprised if he did that. Now,
A and B chair?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he did that because of Hall's credentials, the fact that he stepped in and didn't blow up anything in the last month or 3 weeks of the session. I kind of think he'll be retained. Rosino, I know less about and why that decision was made.
Well, Cal, let's figure out what are we going to remember, do you think, Treat and McCall best for? And one of the things that I would argue is they squandered, I think, and you mentioned all the federal money, squandered a historic opportunity, maybe the greatest opportunity Oklahoma's had in its history to invest in the future, and they muffed it.
Absolutely. They whiffed on the third strike. They had foul tip after foul tip, given opportunities to finally hit the long ball, because a synergism of a strong economy because of oil prices. Remember, oil is $80 a barrel right now. It's been as low as, you know, 9 or so in the last few decades. So they had that in place, and not because they did anything smart. It's just a national or international oil market. Secondly, because of the Democrats and Biden in Washington, they're awash with billions of federal dollars. And so they had, as you said, a historic opportunity to make the investments and get us out of the bottom 5 or 8 states in every category. But they just couldn't bring themselves to do it because they were so damn busy protecting their right flank on these goofy social issues that, for the most part, will be struck down by the Supreme Court, or, if they're not, will be abusive to large elements of Oklahoma society, meaning minorities and women. So, yes, they blew it.
So I think we'll remember them for that. What else? Anything?
They're very pleasant guys if you're around them. Treat's always been courteous to me when I saw him. McCall, he made a hell of a departure speech that went on and on pretty long. Became teary-eyed about certain things, which is, I guess, what's to be done. But I measure those people not by a departure speech or even a introductory speech. It's what's in between. What did they do? What is their statutory record? And again, I can't give McCall much more than a D+ and B- for treat, and they'll go on down the road.
So what we'll remember them best for is a missed historic opportunity, and that they created this nightmare in which they ceded way too much power to the governor. So at the end of the day, that's going to be their signature legislative achievements or lack thereof.
You know, I don't know why you asked me, because you've encapsulated it perfectly, both their own statutory and constitutional powers that they threw in the ash heap of history, but the financial opportunity 2 years from now, say to their grandkids, when I came into office, we were last in everything. When I left office, we were at least headed towards being in the middle range of making Oklahoma, if not a great state, a good state. And grandson, I'm proud of that. They won't be able to say that, and that's a huge loss.
Well, Cal, thank you for your time today. It is always fantastic to have your insight and wisdom.
Well, you're very kind.
And it's just fun to talk to you too. So,
You're not going to leave this already, are you? You are, aren't you?
Oh, unfortunately, we got to.
You're not even going to talk about the Bondar coal race.
Well, let's come back. Let's come back after the election.
We can do that.
This is recorded on election day, so some of these things will be decided tonight. But there'll be plenty to talk about, particularly if he gives old Tom a little scare.
Going to be a runoff, mark my word, tonight. There's going to be a runoff in that race. You heard it here first.
Okay. Sign off.
So
that'll be our next
episode. Cal's famous statement, often wrong, but never in doubt. So who knows? And I use that line about myself, too. So.
Thank you, Cal. We'll pick this conversation up next on the Spirit That Issue. So,
got you. All right.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
We recorded this episode tonight, June 18th, about 4 p.m. in the afternoon with Cal Hobson. And today, like we mentioned in the episode, was the primaries. And boy, in short, Tom Cole did not make it to a runoff. He won his primary outright. But boy, tonight was a doozy of an election. As we discussed, Greg McCourtney was in a tough race, and he actually lost his primary as well. So the Senate pro tem elect is no longer in the Oklahoma Senate. We have no idea who the next person in line might be. Kevin Wallace, the chair of the Appropriations and Budget Committee in the House, is in a runoff. He barely, he's neck and neck with the next challenger. We lost a number of Republican incumbents. I mean, so it's not all bad, but like Senator Jessica Garvin lost her primary. And there's a couple other incumbents that are in primaries as well, in runoffs. But anyways, it's really hard to read what the race meant tonight, because at first blush, it looks like more reasonable Republicans like Senator Greg McCourtney were punished for their moderation. But Senator Garvin, she was hardly moderate, because she really ran some pretty atrocious legislation. So overall, it's kind of a terrible night for Oklahoma politics. A lot of question marks, a lot of uncertainty. If the Republican electorate is disgruntled, why? And really, we have to remember that voter turnout is absolutely terrible in the state of Oklahoma, but tonight was no different. Some of these races barely broke 4 digits in the overall turnout in their for any given candidate. So, it's really hard to see if this was a case of extremists winning out, because Shane Jett also barely won his election. So, it's a hard read, but there's a lot of shockers, and maybe this is how it's supposed to look like. But when you see the good guys get, voted out, like, you did with, like, what happened tonight with Greg McCourtney. You know, it's not unlike Steve Copeland losing his race a couple years ago. Of course, Steve Copeland is a Democrat. But anyway, so just a quick epilogue to kind of wrap up what actually happened tonight. You know, people will be running. There's a number of races that will be in runoffs in August. Turnout, you know, that's actually, if there's an underdog in any of these races, any of these runoffs, that's actually a good sign. You know, it's usually a good thing for the underdog in runoffs. But wow, you guys, wow, tonight was quite a shocker. And I have to say, Republican or not, Greg McCourtney is a good one. And it is really a shame that we are losing him from the state legislature. So anyways, our next episode will actually be a session wrap, a re-recording, a rebroadcast of Newsmakers last week with Representatives Jared Deck and Annie Mintz from Norman. So I have a feeling that that's all going to tie in really nicely together. So anyways, quick epilogue. Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.